Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga.
Progressively, over the last 50 years, UNEP has led the world to understand the centrality of environment in human existence, to appreciate the increased threats to the environment, and also the existential threat that exists to our planet.
The UN Environment Programme wrapped up its assembly this week in Nairobi with a special session commemorating its 50th anniversary.
We are installing new vaccine refrigerators, repairing vaccine refrigerators already in use or available at district level, and distributing vaccine carriers and cold boxes.
The UN Children's Agency says it's procuring nearly 7 million doses of polio vaccine to inoculate children in Malawi.
To the best of my knowledge, no security force members have been held accountable for these very serious allegations of abuses in counterterrorism operations.
And Burkina Faso's six-year conflict with the terrorist groups spreads to the southwest of the country and begins to spill into neighboring countries. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. As the UN Environment Programme wrapped up its assembly this week in Nairobi, a special session commemorated the 50th anniversary of the world's highest level decision-making body on the environment. From Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
May we be upstanding for His Excellency Honorable Uhuru Kenyatta, President of the Republic of Kenya and the Commander-in-Chief of the Defence Forces.
World leaders and representatives from more than 100 nations joined the celebrations in a two-day special session. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta reflected on the significant progress made and what lies in the decades to come.
Today marks a proud moment as we celebrate the extraordinary environment journey that we all have walked together as a global community. The Stockholm Conference in 1972 led to the establishment of the United Nations Environmental Programme and galvanized the formation of environment ministries and agencies around the world.
Since then, he said, through a series of protocols such as the 1987 Montreal Protocol for limiting greenhouse gas emissions and conferences such as the Perth Summit in 1992, UNEP has transformed itself into a powerful force as it champions the environment agenda.
Progressively, over the last 50 years, UNEP has led the world to understand the centrality of environment in human existence, to appreciate the increased threats to the environment, and also the existential threat that exists to our planet.
President Muhammadu Buhari of Nigeria said the celebrations providing an opportunity to spur collective action to address the triple planetary crisis of climate change, nature and biodiversity loss, and pollution and waste.
As we all know, no country or continent can address this global crisis alone. Each nation has a central role to play in protecting our people and planet.
The UN Environment Agency was created simply to be the world's environmental conscience. Inge Anderson is its executive director.
UNEP and the environmental movement has traveled far since its birth in 1972 Stockholm Conference. Our journey has sometimes been difficult, but it has always guided by vision, by science, by the certainty that a healthy environment benefits everyone, everywhere.
Some say the effects of climate change are severe, causing widespread losses to populations and ecosystems around the world. Anderson is urging concerted efforts to tackle the crisis.
We need everyone with us, and not just the true believers. And yes, some of us must do more than others. This is how we deliver justice for those who bear the least responsibility for the triple planetary crisis but suffer the most.
Prior to the anniversary celebrations, delegates endorsed a historic resolution to end plastic pollution and forge an international legally binding agreement by 2024. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
The UN Children's Agency says procuring nearly 7 million doses of polio vaccine to inoculate children in Malawi. The action follows a confirmed polio case last month in Malawi's capital, the first reported in Africa in 5 years, and the first in Malawi in decades. Lameka Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi had last reported a polio case in 1992. The country was declared polio-free in 2005, 15 years before the African continent as a whole was declared polio-free. But health experts said the polio strain, which paralyzed a 3-year-old child last month, is similar to one in Pakistan, and noted that the child was not fully vaccinated against polio. UNICEF says the planned mass immunization will target the unvaccinated as well as children previously vaccinated, so all can have full protection from the polio virus. Rudolf Schwenk is UNICEF's representative in Malawi. He says the preparations for the first round of vaccinations are expected to start March 21.
We are installing new vaccine refrigerators, repairing vaccine refrigerators already in use or available at district level, and distributing vaccine carriers and cold boxes.
George Jobe is the executive director for the Malawi Health Equity Network. He says the emphasis should be on convincing mothers to have trust in vaccines, which was eroded because of misconceptions associated with COVID-19 vaccines.
There's need for more awareness raising by government of Malawi, different partners, including UNICEF itself. And when doing that awareness raising, it should be made clear that vaccines for children have been there earlier than the COVID-19 vaccine, and these are routine in Malawi.
Shivank says the training of health workers and community leaders is already underway. Malawi provides a polio vaccine that targets polio virus type 1 and type 3 following the eradication of polio virus type 2 many years back. UNICEF says the oral polio vaccine to be administered is for world polio virus type 1. The UN agency says the 6.9 million doses will cover the first 2 rounds of the mass immunization campaign in March and April. It says more vaccine is expected to cover all 4 rounds of the polio immunization campaign, expected to end in June. In the meantime, experts from the World Health Organization, UNICEF, the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control, and the Global Polio Eradication Initiative are working to detect any potential cases in Malawi and neighboring countries. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Experts warn that the growing anti-immigrant movement in South Africa may result in mental health problems for many migrants who are on the brink of being forced out of the country. Some citizens, pointing out that South Africa has the world's highest unemployment rate, have launched campaigns demanding that foreign nationals leave to ease competition for employment. Meanwhile, the government is enacting laws that will leave thousands of migrants out of work. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
2022 started with many immigrants trying to regain their jobs and livelihoods after most spent the last 2 years sitting at home because of COVID. But for a group of close to 250,000 Zimbabweans, that recovery is no longer possible. Their work permits were terminated, and the government gave them till the end of this year to pack and leave. At the same time, a group of locals calling itself Operation Dudula, meaning chasing out, have intensified marches around the country demanding that companies replace all migrant workers with South Africans. The government has not helped matters. It just published a proposed national labor migration policy for public comment. The policy, which is likely to become law before the end of the year, seeks to limit the number of foreign nationals a company can hire, preserve certain jobs for South Africans, and ban foreign nationals from operating certain small businesses. Carol Nyakuja, a mental health expert, told VOA that these actions are taking a toll on migrants and could result in multiple mental health problems.
Let's look out for each other. Let's look out for signs of depression. These include irritation. This includes insomnia, not being able to sleep, lack of appetite, being disinterested in the things that you would normally be interested in, things like suicidal ideas. Let's look out for each other and be able to support each other when these things are happening.
Christopher Ncube, a migrant worker, told VOA that being forced out of South Africa will be devastating for most migrants.
We are left guessing and we don't know what will happen tomorrow. Those affected, should I say, will find it difficult to pay school fees for their kids. They find it difficult again to pay rents. Definitely, we are going to find many people in the streets.
Zimbabwean migrant Mercy Mbundla said signs of depression and anxiety already are vivid in many foreign workers.
We will really be affected badly because as it is right now, we are just in between a hard place and a rock. We don't know where to go with the permits not being renewed. We are just struggling. Mentally, we are struggling.
However, Nyakuchka is urging the migrants to accept their new reality so that their brains are motivated to focus on solutions such as new opportunities. She urges those who are overwhelmed to go to counseling or at least talk to someone. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
South Africa has the world's highest number of HIV patients, but the COVID-19 pandemic disrupted access to care, prevention, and testing, raising concerns of a spike in infections. With COVID numbers dropping, South Africa's health experts are scrambling to step up high HIV programs, as Linda Jivtash reports from Johannesburg.
With COVID-19 under control in South Africa, health workers are putting the spotlight back on the country's first pandemic, HIV. Soshanguve, north of Pretoria, is considered a hotspot for the disease. A mobile clinic is attempting to fill gaps in HIV services while targeting the most vulnerable populations, women and girls. Asanda Nkada is a clinical coordinator for the NGO MIET Africa.
It's easy for them to get HIV because of, first of all, the boys, they don't want to condomize. So if a lady depends on a guy financial or anyhow, then it's easy for them to allow the guy not to use a condom. They're also at risk of getting raped. They are also at risk of getting married at a very young age.
Reaching people wasn't as easy during COVID-19 lockdowns, Nkata says.
There were difficulties in terms of reaching our target because everyone was indoors. Everyone is home. People, they were losing their jobs. So there was a high risk of poverty. Obvious, when people are at home, all they do is intercourse.
The United Nations says that for the first time in the history of fighting HIV, there were significant declines in testing and treatment for HIV amid the coronavirus pandemic. That means people are at greater risk of unknowingly spreading the disease. Health workers say it's still too early to quantify any increases in HIV spread, but they say factors such as increasing teen pregnancy, gender-based violence, and school dropout rates are cause for concern. Mfo Mtabese is a program manager for MIET Africa.
I'm worried about HIV rising again because of COVID, you know. I'm worried about poverty going up. I'm worried about a whole lot of things, you know. Unemployment, because COVID has affected our lives in so many aspects.
The setback could reverse years of progress and cost lives. Eva Kavango is the South Africa Country Director for the Joint United Nations Program on HIV/AIDS, or UNAIDS.
UNAIDS predicts that the world could face 7.7 million deaths, AIDS deaths, over the next 10 years. And 4.7 million of those deaths will occur in Africa. If we make the needed investments and achieve the 2025 targets, we could save the lives of 2.7 million people.
Despite the economic impact of COVID-19, Kawango says many international groups like the Global Fund have continued HIV funding, allowing countries to continue pursuing targets.
South Africa has shown very strong efforts, and communities have been so resilient. And we've seen initiatives that have been scaled up.
By reinvigorating efforts, she says, HIV can become a disease of the past. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Burkina Faso's six-year conflict with the terrorist groups has spread to the southwest of the country and is beginning to spill into neighboring countries. The conflict is also sparking accusations of human rights abuses, as Henry Wilkins reports from southwest Burkina Faso.
Binta Sangare, whose name has been changed to protect her identity, says armed men entered her house one night in November, shouting and shining flashlights on her. She says they kidnapped her husband and disappeared into the night. She says just after the men left, she heard gunshots and that seven people were killed that night. Local people found the bodies of six, and the last one a few days later. Her husband's body was among them and later buried. She says the men who took her husband away were Burkinabe security forces. At her husband's funeral, they came again and detained people from the Fulani ethnic group, she says. They came to kidnap and kill without cause or investigation. That makes us scared every day, she told VOA. Burkina Faso has been battling armed groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda for 6 years. In the last year, the conflict has spread south. Reports of extrajudicial killings by Burkinabe forces, known as FDS, have increased. Rights groups say there is a common misconception that Fulanis are behind many of the terror attacks and say Fulanis make up the majority of victims of pro-government forces. VOA spoke with seven witnesses in the southwest municipality of Jigwe, who said relatives were abducted or killed by security forces in November. Some allege that government-backed civilian militia groups, or VDPs, have been involved in the deaths and disappearances. One witness, whose identity has also been protected, said the Dozos, a militia group, shot and killed his nephew. He says terror attacks have increased and security forces are relying on the Dozos to maintain security. He says the FDS are staying in their bases and letting the Dozos go out into the bush. At first, the FDS were accompanied by the Dozos, and they were interrogating all ethnic groups. But since things are in the Dozos' hands, they are only interested in the Fulani, he added. One Burkinabe human rights group, the Collective Against Impunity and the Stigmatization of Communities, says 17 people were murdered in Jigwe in November. In a VOA interview, the group's founder called on leaders to act. He urges them to suspend the operations of the VDPs and the armed civilians, adding that the group strongly hopes leaders take into account the international respect of human rights and the sacredness of human life. Human Rights Watch says the FDS, which took power from a democratically elected government in January, has carried out many extrajudicial killings since the conflict began.
To the best of my knowledge, no security force members have been held accountable for these very serious allegations of abuses and counterterrorism operations.
The FDS did not respond to a request for comment. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Southwest, Burkina Faso.
Zimbabwe has launched an emergency road repair program after a public outcry over the high death toll on the country's roads. Columbus Mavunga reports from the capital, Harare.
Zimbabwe's roads are in bad shape after years of neglect by the government of the late President Robert Mugabe. Instead of driving on the left, motorists drive on what is left of the road in some cases. This is what happened when 46-year-old Meshack Rujada was hit by a motorist while trying to avoid potholes. Rujada welcomes the effort to bring the roads up to par. He says, I think road repairs will drastically reduce road accidents, as well as not speeding and looking out for pedestrians because they are also human beings. Only that they are poor. I think that's what is important. Zimbabwe's government says it is aware of the complaints and recently introduced what it calls Emergency Road Rehabilitation Program 2, better known here as ERRP2, to ensure all roads are repaired. Officials say results should be visible by the end of the year. Information Minister Monica Mchangwa says the program includes the upgrade of drainage system to keep water off the roads.
The Emergency Road Rehabilitation Program 2 wishes to inform the public that significant progress was achieved in implementing the ERRP2 on the repair and construction of drainage structures, as well as the reclamation of gullies and the repair of washaways, where the percentage completion of works exceeded 70%.
Mchangwa added that the government has released about $20 million for the program and more will be allocated. On average, 5 people die every day because of accidents on Zimbabwe's roads, according to official statistics. Jean Toditi, the UN Secretary General's special envoy for road safety, recently met with Zimbabwe officials to discuss improving the safety record. Sirag Gebrehiwit is the UN communication specialist in Zimbabwe.
The UN Secretary General's special envoy for road safety alluded that Zimbabwe had the opportunity to achieve the goal of reducing by half the road traffic crash fatalities and injuries by 2030. With increased political and financial commitment from all stakeholders, the country can turn the situation around.
That would surely be good news for people like Rujada. We have survived road accidents and don't want another one. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
A South African entrepreneur has turned a sweet dream into reality. He used the government's COVID-19 relief grant to launch an ice cream business that's now creating jobs for others at a time when the country faces record high unemployment. Linda Jevtash reports from Johannesburg.
Making gourmet ice cream was never a business that photographer and fashion designer Tando Mukubu planned to pursue. But when coronavirus lockdowns hit South Africa and his regular work disappeared, he started thinking out of the box.
I was actually on an app called Pinterest, and I was just looking up food. People who know me know that I really love food. And then I found myself looking at this ice cream, which was interestingly made. And I thought to myself, I've never seen anything like this in Soweto. So I'm like, let me just try it out.
Like many others, he was receiving a government COVID-19 unemployment grant of 350 rand, or roughly $23 a month. He used it to buy ingredients and experimented with the help of his siblings and mother. They shared photos of their creations and received orders from friends, family, and even a local celebrity.
And luckily, we had a relationship with Mohale Mutaung. He's a local celebrity. He liked it. He came through. He took images of the product. Then he posted it. And then, obviously, he has a lot of people following him. And then those people also loved it.
The Soweto Creamery was born, is regularly packed on weekends, and has since gained thousands of followers on social media. Last week, the business received nationwide recognition when President Cyril Ramaphosa acknowledged Mukubu's innovative use of the grant during his State of the Nation address. Ramaphosa also announced the grant would be extended another year while unemployment remains at nearly 35%. But economists say the government needs to do more to stimulate business. Davi Root is chief economist for the Efficient Group.
I am afraid that economic growth this year is probably going to be significantly below 2%. We have to remove the administrative burden on all businesses, and not only on small businesses, on medium and higher and bigger businesses as well, because that is where eventually economic growth is going to take place, and that is eventually where jobs will be created.
While the Soweto Creamery remains a small enterprise, it is creating jobs. Makubu was able to employ four other staffers, including his younger brother, who didn't qualify for the unemployment grant since he is a student. Musa Makubu is now an employee of the creamery.
I wasn't making anything for myself, so I had no data, can't go out, can't have simple things. So yeah, it was stressful.
With more publicity and more success, the Makubu family hopes to move the creamery out of their home and into a storefront. They also want to thank the president in person for putting the spotlight on them.
Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa, we'd like to have you at Soweto Creamery.
Although the grant may not be the solution to the country's economic woes, the entrepreneurs behind Soweto Creamery have proven that with a bit of creativity, you can create something sweet. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. And coming up in the second half of the program, the Saturday Music Spot from our collection of music from across the continent. And it's now time for our Saturday Music Spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great African music.
Genesee, good day. Yes. What about the babes? Yes. Babes from UK. Show my name in the lane. Timba Fago B. Can I touch any Kele? Kele Tony Kebe. Island boys. Yes. We the carry boys. Yes. She didn't get money. My kind money. Olu Aloni Ganja. Imi Loni Bunla. Bado Loni Vibe. Fella Loni Shrine. I just want flex. Me nobody had up on my head. And if I push your button, you go push my button. I go rock your body. Where you be? Girl, I'm in the mood. Make I show my face. I don't know how to party, but I learn from parties who never to be caught on fresh. I just want flex. Me nobody had up on my head. And if I push your button, you go push my button. I go rock your body.
That was our Saturday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America and from the rest of the Nightline Africa team. We thank you for joining us tonight. And join us tomorrow, Sunday. I'm Douglas Mpoga.